This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to DC Standum, your guided tour of the DC multiverse. I am your host, Mike Cicchini, the editor-in-chief of DennyGeek.com. And each week, I bring you discussions with writers, artists, actors, and experts covering everything from DC Comics, DC TV shows, to the big screen of the DCEU. And it's kind of a crossover episode this time around because I've got big screen Riddler, Paul Dano, joining me for a conversation, but it's about comics. But it's also about the movies. How can this be? Well, that's because the man who just gave us the most terrifying version of the Riddler ever seen on film is also writing a comic about the character's earlier days in Gotham City. That's right. DC tapped Dano to write the Riddler Year One, set firmly in the same universe as the Batman, and it takes place about a year before the events that we see on screen. Now, I have read the first issue. It is as unsettling and creepy as Dano's on-screen performance as Edward Nashton. But you know who isn't unsettling and creepy? Paul Dano. This is such a fun conversation. He's such a smart guy. He clearly loved getting the opportunity to get even deeper into this character's head. And you know what else? He is super nice and patient. Why am I telling you that? Because, look, there's no way I can't tell this story. We were halfway through this interview and my laptop croaked, okay? And for whatever reason, the recording didn't back up, and that was the end of that. So I had to call him back and, you know, like talk to his manager and everything. And I said, look, the recording was lost. I'm sorry. And I thought for a second that they were just going to be like, well, look, forget it. You had your time and that was it. But that's not what happened. Paul was kind enough to redo the entire first half of the interview with me. Not everyone would do that. So once again, I got to give it up and thank the guy for being extra cool and nice on top of just giving us some great insights into his Riddler performance, his writing process, his collaboration with the artist on the book. It's a lot of fun. So here's Paul Dano to talk about the Riddler Year One. The first question that came to my mind when I was reading this book last night, I had to wonder, when in the process of, you know, playing the Riddler, how much of your preparation for that role ended up on the page with this book?
Yeah. So the essence of it is there. And that's sort of why I'm doing this. A lot of my work as an actor is to sort of get to page one of the script, and to sort of build the life that was lived so I can carry it with me into the film. You know, whether that means just physically or point of view wise, but we all carry our life with us in some way, shape, or form. It informs, you know, right, all this sort of, you know, our point of view and how our, you know, where we hold our energy in our bodies and blah, blah, blah. So each time it's kind of about building that, so that I'm not just, it's not just Paul and Paul's unconscious, but it's Edwards slash some, you know, some meeting of Paul and the character. So the sort of emotional essence of the comic was my backstory. It did not have a plot in the same way that this does. So once I started working on the comic, I really felt like I didn't want it to just be in service of the film. I wanted it to be, you know, stand on its own two legs and I wanted it to be an experience for the reader and to be a story in its own right. So there are elements in this comic now that were not a part of my backstory when I was making the film, but it is all to support the general backstory that I had when playing the character, and sort of what got me there. And there are key pieces that are exact as well. Yeah, it's kind of taken on its own life now, though, and it's sort of out of my control at this point. Meaning, once you start writing, you know, and then working with the artist, it just sort of has really kind of kept growing and taking on its own life in a way that I really like, that makes it really fun for me.
It's such a unique thing for an actor to then get to, you know, get to write their character in a comic book, like, you know, particularly after playing like this character with, you know, 75 years of history on, like, in one of the most successful movies of the year. So is this something that you went to DC with, like, hey, I want to do this? Or did somebody come to you and say, like, hey, you should fill out the Riddler's backstory here?
No, you know, I think it was one of my last nights of filming. It could have been the last night, maybe the second last night. We were in the character's apartment, and I told Matt, and I had talked a lot about backstory. Matt and I get along really well. We're both, I think, a little bit like-minded in a sort of very meticulous, thorough, maybe semi-obsessive approach to our work. And so in preparation, we talked a lot about Edward, who he was, and all that. But towards the end of filming, I started in the apartment. I had some memory of something from my backstory, which I didn't write it in comic form, but I read so many comics to prepare for the part, so many Batman comics, that I felt like his backstory should have that sort of archetypal essence that comic images have, where it's almost like an image tells the story. So I did have sort of key backstory images in my mind. So I told Matt about a couple of them when we were in this apartment, and he was like, that should be a comic. And I secretly thought it could be, but I had not expressed that, maybe to my wife, but and I think I even sort of secretly was like bringing it up in case somebody like thought, hey, you know, that's, and maybe I can't even remember, but I knew that I would have been afraid to, you know, frankly, an actor in a comic, I'm like, okay, guy, you know, like, okay. So, cause I respect the medium, and, Matt was like, that should be a comic. And I was like, yeah, I think it could be. And literally the next day, so it wasn't my last day, because literally the next day he was like, I emailed DC, you know, or whatever. I spoke to DC. And or Dylan Clark, our producer, out, I think. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, wow. All right. So like, yeah, they want to talk to you. I was like, okay, great. You know? And so then once, after some time we'd been done filming, I finally talked to them, and they liked the idea as well. And what I told them about the story and blah, blah, blah. And then it was one of those gulp moments of like, oh shit, now I actually, you know, get the privilege / have to do this. And I've been plugging away at it, frankly, for quite a long time.
It's such a, you know, it's a disturbing story. Obviously, Edward's, you know, a tough character to watch on screen, you know, like, and on the page, now that we're getting into his head, he's, you know, it's very sad, and he's kind of a pathetic figure in this first issue, but there's a great phrase where he's, you know, trying to reassure himself during his insomnia that Einstein only took naps, you know? And I think that is like the first real flash of the ego that kind of, you know, drives him to, I guess, supervillainy, you know, mm-hmm. later in his story. You know, but I just want to know if there's anything that you could say about that line, or if there's anything else that you kind of feel you wanted to pepper in, because I know some people are always a little concerned about making characters like this a little too sympathetic, you know, when in fact we know what they're capable of down the line.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have thought about one, the sympathy thing, and it's funny because as an actor, I have to have enough empathy to like find a way in. Mm-hmm. Or find a way, I have to find a doorway in there, you know, somehow. But now I'm also a storyteller writing a comic. I'm not just playing the character. So I do have to think about, you know, sort of what this is, right? And if anything, I hope that somehow it ends up being a a cautionary tale, if anything. I mean, I hope it's fun and enjoyable to read. And, but yeah, it's he's not like, he's not a hero, right? Even though we're in his point of view, and in some ways he is the hero of this comic, even though, you know, so it's a little bit complicated, and I've been trying to kind of keep tabs on that and respect that. The Einstein only took naps line, definitely, you know, pop of ego, and also what is it like to never be seen or heard? You know, this is a guy who's never had anybody give him, you know, the time of day in his entire life, and never had a chance, and all this sort of, what's it like to be as smart as he is? You know, what's it like to be a genius, but nobody knows it? And I think in that moment you're talking, that's kind of the end of what I would maybe call like the prologue to the comic. It's like a day in the life of Edward Nash, and this sort of how it begins, and you literally begin inside his head. And he's also reassuring himself. You know, he's just trying. This is a guy who's really struggling, so he's trying to make it through the night, and he's saying, "Einstein only took naps. You're okay." Again, I think the opportunity here for me, or what I have to give to this medium, I think is like a really subjective, emotional, psychological experience of the character.
You mentioned that you wrote this in treatment form, you know, and you're a first time comics writer. So what did that mean for your artistic collaboration with Stefan Subic, whose work is just like on the page, just suits this particular vision of Gotham so well?
Yes, I can't wait for people to see his work, because I really think he's got something, and he's been just wonderful to work with. So I wrote in treatment form. I tried writing in comic script form a little bit just to mess around with it, but for me, because it's foreign to my eyes, it just didn't feel like emotional enough, frankly. Like I was too, like I was still catching on to the layout too much, and it just didn't. That's not true for some other comic writer, right? That's just me, because I'd never done it. So I needed to write in a way that where when I read it, it sung to me, you know. So I wrote in treatment form, and had things in my head, of course, and then I would send it to Stefan, and you know, we had to kind of find the language together, right? So I think each issue after this will be a much different workflow, but this first one was highly collaborative. Stefan, here's what I saw when I wrote this paragraph, right? And then he would say, great, or he would offer something else and often offer something better, you know? So we kind of started with just basic comic language. Language, whether it's the written word or film language, right? Why the camera does what it does, and same with comics, like why the panel, you know. So I write, like as you read it, it's told through panels, right? It's not super progressive, you know, new edgy, you know. I really like being in sort of a Hitchcockian way, like you are told, like, look at this, you know, and now look at this. And so I wanted to, you know, be fairly classical. But Stefan brings enough kind of edge to it that I think it's really still grabs you and is entertaining. And we would do these crude layouts together on Zoom, where he would, I mean, share screen and draw some layouts, and we'd talk about it and kind of get the storytelling down and find our common language. And then once we were kind of like, great, we both, you know, feel good about this, he'd then go start doing the pencils and I'd keep writing the next thing. And we did that with colors too. Now we kind of have our language, and Stefan really is rocking, and I'm kind of, you know, but we Zoom quite a lot. I don't know any other relationship is like between a comic writer and a comic artist, but ours I find to be like super collaborative, kind of intense too. Like we Zoom a lot and for a long time. It's been a really cool collaboration, and I've learned a lot. You know, that's been the really fun thing about this.
This is so different from any other version of the Riddler origin story that's ever been told. And yet there is one really fun callback to the very first Riddler story from Detective Comics number 140. I just want to know how that came about, because it's just like you blink and you miss it.
So did you know that off the top of your head when you saw it on the page?
Yes, I did. Like I'm a tremendous dork. Like, and I was like, wait a minute, yeah. Like these are water clues. And I just remembered that from,
That's incredible. I can't wait to I cannot wait to tell Stevan that, which I will email him right when we get off.
Tell him I got really excited.
he put that in there, and it's been very important to him because that's the first time. So this was a part of my backstory when playing the film, like games, like that's the only place that Edward has ever gotten any positive feedback in his life. What was my point of view on this when acting it? It's like, the game, you know, the riddle, you know, cracking it, and that. So he had to find ways to get anything that felt good by himself. Gotham never gave him anything to feel good about. So you see him playing a game, and it says you win, and then he feels better, you know. So that's I didn't know. I said we got to design this game. Like I didn't know what to call the game. I was like, it's like, you know, what's the right, you know, tone to strike here. And Stevan put in this Easter egg callback that you very astutely caught. And he was really excited about it. And I was like, that's a good idea. Yeah. You know,
just so you know, the only reason I caught that is because when I was a kid, I had like a book of old, like reprints of Batman comics, like that my folks had gotten me for Christmas that I just like read to pieces when I was a kid. So like, I must've read that first Riddler story like a dozen times when I was little. So that was why I caught it. Like, it was just like, wow. It's like, oh, cool. Like it's a crossword and it's water clues. Wait a second. So I had to go back and check.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I love stuff like that because it feels, look, this book feels so much like, you know, it obviously is an extension of the Batman film visually, thematically, in terms of tone, but especially it's the thematic element. You know, if the movie to me in a lot of ways was about Batman's journey from, you know, symbol of vengeance to symbol of hope, right? Or beginning that journey, this comic kind of underlines that with the dichotomy between hope and vengeance. And it seems like Edward is looking for hope and instead is, you know, is heading in the other direction.
Wow. I like that, Mike. That's good.
But
that's great.
You know, how much, there's other parallels as far as, you know, the journal versus the voiceover in the movie, you know, so like how much of these Batman and Riddler parallels are intentional or important to you when you were creating this?
Well, I mean, pretty important.
Yeah.
Know? I mean, you know, he didn't, you know, Riddler doesn't exist without, you know, the Batman. So, I really like what you said. And I think it's really, I'm actually gonna, you know, hope to vengeance, the opposite of the film. It's a very interesting sort of thing you just pointed out, because I in some ways I think that is true enough. For me, so there's a book called Inner Gold by a psychologist named Robert A. Johnson, and he talks about how we often ask somebody else to hold our inner gold for us because we're not ready for it yet. Like, we don't know what to do with it, or we can't. And so it could be an icon you look up to. It could be a friend who's more happy than you are, or more X than you, you know, like whatever, or something, you know. And like, you know, the idea is one day you're going to be able to take that back and hold it on your own. They're helping you to carry it for you. I always sort of saw that Batman was that for Edward. And that's what helps him get through becomes something that helps him get through the day and the night. Of course, I should now add in, like, I pop out of that POV, and it's kind of a twisted way of interpreting this very wonderful book that's very helpful, and it's not, you know, so I'm kind of twisting a good thing there on Edward's behalf. But yes, the parallels are, I would guess that they're all in intentional, you know, it's really an important and fun part of the comic as it continues, I think.
Great. Well, I think we're good, unless there's anything else that you want to make sure folks know about this.
No, I'm excited to get to share it, and you know, we're just about to print issue one, and issue two is cooking, and I like issue two so far, and so we're on our way. No, I'm excited.
Well, congratulations! It's a really cool comic so far. I'm looking forward to the rest of it.
All right, cool, man. Thanks.
And that is it for this week's DC Stand'em. Keep it right here for more exclusive interviews and special surprises from the world of DC TV and movies. Make sure you're subscribing to us wherever you're listening right now. Upcoming episodes include Mark Silvestri on his upcoming Batman Joker, The Deadly Duo. I've got the writers on the new era of Superman. So that is Philip Kennedy Johnson talking about Action Comics. And for real, folks, if you haven't been reading Action Comics for like the last year and a half, do you even like Superman? Like, no joke. These are the best Superman comics in like 30 years. Anyway, I digress. Joshua Williamson is coming back to DC Stand'em, but instead of talking about Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths, this time he's talking about his upcoming tenure as the new writer of Superman. And Dan Juergens will join me once again to talk more about the cool backups he'll be doing in Action Comics with Lee Weeks. It's going to be a good time. I've got other surprises up my sleeve too, so make sure you're subscribing. You don't want to miss these. By the way, I hope you checked out the giant-sized Black Adam episode I just did with Dwayne Johnson and Pierce Brosnan and the rest of the DCEU JSA. Go give that a listen, please. Like, let me know I'm not alone here. Anyway, don't forget to check out our web home at denofgeek.com where you can find all our DC coverage. Go straight to denofgeek.com/DC for that. Drop me a line on Twitter. I'm at WayOutStuff. But if you really want to show me you love me or that you hate me, I mean, let's get real. And if you want to tell us about what you want to hear about in upcoming episodes of DC Stand'em, then make sure you are following at DC Stand'em on Twitter and Instagram. Please give those a follow and drop us a line. And don't forget, we also have a Marvel show. You can also listen to Marvel Stand'em wherever you're listening or watching this show right now. Check it out. And sometimes we do these shows live, so make sure you're following Den of Geek on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/denofgeektv. This has been another episode of DC Stand'em on the Den of Geek Network. Until next time, I'm Mike Cecchini. And remember, folks, we stand together.